Our presenter today is DJ Hall. She's the managing editor of Wisconsin Watch, a nonprofit investigative news outlet based at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Prior to founding Wisconsin Watch with her husband, Andy Hall, Dee was a reporter and editor for 24 years at the Wisconsin State Journal, specializing in projects and investigations. Please welcome Dee.
Hi, everybody. Really appreciate you having me here today to talk about something that it turns out is a lot more important even than when we first talked about having this particular session. We have been neck deep and knee deep in this disinformation problem for quite a long time now. I'm going to share my screen. I realize now that I need my script, so I might be flipping back and forth, which is not ideal. I think I should probably just perhaps print out my script. So what I'd like to do, I'll just talk for just a second while I go ahead and print it out, because I realize you're not going to want to see my script. That's rather boring. I can tell you a little bit about us. We are based at the UW-Madison. As you just heard, we're on the fifth floor of Vilas Hall, which is in the journalism program. We work very closely with students and young journalists, helping to train them to become investigative journalists. My husband and I worked at the Wisconsin State Journal for many years. I hesitate to tell you how long, but Andy Hall, my husband, was there for 18 years, and I was there for 24 years. It's likely that if you get the State Journal newspaper, you read one of our stories over that long period of time. And then in 2015, I left the Wisconsin State Journal and I started working directly with the Investigative Center, which we had started back in 2009. And so I have been there now since 2015, working as the managing editor. We are growing, which is wonderful. I know a lot of news organizations are not growing. We are shrinking, or they are shrinking, but we are growing. It is a really rough time for journalism, as you'll see. That's part of the presentation I'm about to give. So thanks a lot for giving me this opportunity to share the story of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, the state of journalism, voter suppression, and disinformation. It's a story of challenges, economic as well as trust, imperiling journalism and our democracy. It's a story of hope, too, as nonprofit and for-profit news organizations and people in communities across Wisconsin and America step forward with solutions. I'm going to try to make you guys really tiny on my screen. Okay. In the old days, your trusty newspaper arrived at your doorstep. You had little reason to question whether the information in it was accurate or where it came from. Nope. Sorry. But technological and economic forces, including the emergence of the internet, have drastically reduced revenue to newspapers. Stores and businesses now can reach their customers directly. Many no longer need the local newspaper to get their messages out. Many news consumers prefer to get their information on their phones, tablets, or laptops. And newsrooms are now half the size they were just in 2008. So here you can see the drastic decline in the number of newsroom employees, specifically newspapers. Over the past 15 years in Wisconsin, 77 newspapers have closed. Circulation is down by 1 million. Many newspapers, as you can see, are just gone. And what happens when newspapers die? Here's what researchers have found. There is less voter turnout, fewer competitive races for office. Voters don't know who's running for Congress. Government waste increases when reporters and the public aren't watching. Businesses feel free to pollute and regulators feel free to look the other way. And so when fact-based news disappears, residents start to get information from biased sources instead of nonpartisan ones, which hardens their political positions. The bottom line, no news is bad news for democracy. Trust in media also has declined, although it's a bit better than it was in 2016 at the height of the Russian disinformation campaign. Media that report only one side of the story further erode that trust. Millions of Americans get their news exclusively from Fox News on the right or MSNBC on the left. This split makes viewers unaware of or hostile to perspectives different from the ones they see on TV. And what they see is often not reporting, but commentary. Here in Wisconsin, we have seen the emergence of news reports from outlets with ideological agendas and little or no disclosure of who funds the work. That can lead to confusion over what's fact and what's opinion. And trusted news sources are labeled as fake news and their reporters as enemy of the people. Gallup sums it up this way, quote, Americans' trust in the media has been eroding over time, but in the current highly polarized climate, the views of political partisans have become increasingly divergent. President Donald Trump's description of the media as the, quote, enemy of the people has undoubtedly colored the views of all Americans. This goes without saying, but you can't trust everything you read on the internet. And most people in the U.S. are getting their news from social media, which, as you know, is a mishmash of legitimate news, propaganda, and outright garbage. Do you remember Pizzagate? In fact, the internet and social media have become major sources of disinformation, leading to further media trust as explosive, quote-unquote, stories like the child sex ring run by Hillary Clinton at a Washington, D.C. pizza restaurant are contradicted or ignored by mainstream news outlets. This process prompts consumers of actual fake news to distrust real factual news. And this is how a joke became disinformation. This slide comes from one of my colleagues over at the journalism program. There was a satirist in Cleveland who puts these mashups together just for fun. And so he pasted a picture of a big crowd and said, oh, look, these are people going into a Trump rally in Phoenix. Anybody who's been to Phoenix, of course, can look at the green trees and go, probably not. So you ended up with mainstream news organizations saying that they're that we need to take notice of these massive crowds that are showing up for Trump, that we must, you know, take notice of his great support. But then you've got the Washington Post saying, don't be fooled again. That huge crowd photo is not a Trump rally. The problem with this particular slide is that it came from, or this the meme came from something that looked like the Tennessee Republican Party. That led some media outlets, like the Washington Post, to say Trump's, like the Washington Post, that the photo, to reveal that the photo is a hoax. And that leaves some people feeling like the Republicans were dishonest, when in fact the GOP had nothing to do with the meme. It was the Russians. This is another example. In late November, Rolling Stone magazine reported that the author of this account, I Am Tyra Jackson, was the successor to the Russia's internet research agency, which trolled voters in 2016. According to, and this is a heartwarming tweet about an NFL star who found success after tragic childhood and now has paid for 145 houses for single mothers. In late November, they found that the purpose, according to the Rolling Stones late November article, quote, the purpose of the Tyra account, we believe, was not to spread heartwarming messages to Americans. Rather, the tweet about work done was really a Trojan horse to gain followers and a larger plan by a foreign adversary. In the case of I Am Tyra Jackson, the IRA's goal was twofold: grow an audience in part through heartwarming, inspiring messages, and use that following to spread messages promoting division, distrust, and doubt. This disinformation campaign is often aimed at African Americans. According to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Russian active measures, campaigns, and interference, quote, by far, race and related issues were the preferred target of the information warfare campaign designed to divide the country in 2016. It said 66% of the Internet Research Agency's paid Facebook ads that invoked race were, quote, principally aimed at African Americans in key metropolitan areas. So why target African Americans? The Senate committee concluded that the goal was to weaponize, quote, race, immigration, Second Amendment rights, in an attempt to pit Americans against one another and against their government. but much of our disinformation is homegrown. In 2016, NPR found a purveyor of fake news in suburban LA. The owner of Disinfo Media said he started the company to discredit the, quote, alt-right, but ended up making money by passing on all kinds of fake stories that were shared and believed by millions of people. NPR found Disinfo Media owner Justin Kohler employed as many as 25 people to write fake stories for clients, most of them on the right side of the political spectrum. He spread fake stories from legitimate-sounding websites such as National Report and The Denver Guardian. One story falsely reported that Coloradans were buying marijuana with food stamps. Kohler told NPR, quote, what that turned into was a state representative in the House of Colorado, in the House in Colorado, proposing actual legislation to prevent people from using their food stamps to buy marijuana based on something that had just never happened. Alex Jones's InfoWars Wars is a major purveyor of misinformation. In December, former InfoWars writer Josh Owens wrote a first-person story for the New York Times magazine. He revealed some of the ways in which Jones manipulates his radio listeners with fake and twisted news that seeks to inflame conservatives and boost support for President Donald Trump. Jones convinced many in his audience that the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, in which 20 students and six school staff were killed, was a hoax. The dead children and their parents were actors, he claimed, hired by the government to whip up anti-gun sentiment. A retired University of Minnesota Duluth professor was so taken by the story that he wrote an entire book on the quote-unquote hoax. That man was found guilty of defamation and ordered by a Dane County judge to pay $450,000 to the father of one of the children killed in the massacre. In another story about a peaceful Muslim-dominated community in upstate New York, Owen said Jones ordered him and other reporters to paint the people there as terrorists in training, despite what their own reporting had discovered. This type of messaging filters down and up. At one point during the 2016 campaign, Donald Trump claimed that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama actually founded the terrorist organization ISIS. Said Owens, quote, we ignored certain facts, fabricated others, and took situations out of context to fit our narrative, posting headlines like drone investigates Islamic training center, Sharia law zones confirmed in America, InfoWars reporters stalked by terrorism task force, and Obama terror cells in the United States. The rumors are true. Sharia law is here. In Wisconsin, dueling lawsuits are playing out in state and federal courts that could remove more than 234,000 voters from the rolls, or 7% of all registered voters. The Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty argues the state is required to purge voters who fail to respond to postcards sent to their homes in 30 days. The League of Women Voters and the State Elections Board argue that the program used to identify these voters often flags voters who are not moved or who moved within Wisconsin. Keep in mind, the 2016 presidential election in Wisconsin was decided by less than 1% of vote. Another problem that we've had in Wisconsin is that people in power often do not want, they want to keep the public in the dark. Lafayette County officials considered a resolution that threatened to prosecute media outlets that did not publish news releases from the county word for word. Fortunately, when the extreme measure was brought to national attention, officials abandoned the idea of prosecuting journalists. Especially now, disinformation and misinformation can be used to mislead people, prompting them to make bad, even fatal choices, like failing to abide by social distancing advice or orders, or making trips to grocery stores because they're bored and they don't think this pandemic is real. I'm sharing a slide here from a group called First Draft, which we're working with. It's an organization that is training journalists to identify and avoid spreading disinformation, misinformation, and fake news, which it calls information disorder. Information disorder is not quote-unquote fake news. It's an umbrella term for propaganda, lies, conspiracies, rumors, hoaxes, hyperpartisan content, falsehoods, or manipulated media. First Draft uses the terms disinformation, misinformation, or malinformation. Collectively, it's called information disorder. First Draft also has devised a trumpet of amplification to show how fake and misleading information starts and can be amplified if news organizations are not careful. First Draft advises that journalists be extremely careful with information in the first three categories: the anonymous web, such as 4chan, closed or semi-closed networks, such as chat groups on Facebook, and conspiracy communities. to avoid spreading dis and misinformation that most people have not heard about. But when these conspiracy theories bubble to the surface, it's important to address them. Just last week, rumors that the National Guard was poised to force everyone to stay home prompted the Guard to issue this extraordinary press release detailing the Guard's work to help with elections, transport COVID-19 positive passengers from cruise ships, and help with an understaffed nursing home that had suffered an outbreak. The Guard said, quote, "We have not discussed enforcing statewide quarantines, shutting down interstate highways, nor any of the other baseless rumors that are circulating. Unfortunately, there are nefarious actors, in some cases from other countries, operating in the shadows and intentionally circulating false information and misinformation via social media. We understand that these rumors are part of a concerted disinformation campaign aimed at creating hysteria and panic in our nation's communities." The Guard was reacting to rumors like these, spread by social media, that claimed soldiers would soon be occupying the streets of America for a two-week quarantine. It tells everyone to, quote, "stock up on whatever you need to make sure you have a two-week supply of everything." Such false information can lead people to panic by creating shortages of food and essential supplies. In fact, this particular screenshot is from my husband's Facebook messaging feed from one of his brothers. "In any time there's crisis, the hucksters rush in, touting miracle cures. Always consult credible sources when deciding how to treat an illness. I always go to the Mayo Clinic website first." So no silver solution cannot keep you from getting COVID-19. Here's the reality. Not only are we dealing with a worldwide health crisis, but our capacity to provide news keeps shrinking. The number of newspapers is down. The number of reporters covering news is down. Hard-hitting news is too expensive, and the public's trust in the news is declining. At Wisconsin Watch, we provide an antidote to these corrosive trends. We are nonpartisan and nonprofit. We fully reveal all of our funders. Our stories are intensely fact-checked. Our mission is to increase the quality, quantity, and understanding of investigative journalism to foster an informed citizenry and strengthen democracy. Our guiding values are protect the vulnerable, expose wrongdoing, and explore solutions. We tell uncomfortable truths that are sometimes hard to dig out. We revealed that Wisconsin Watch had kept an inmate in solitary for 27 years. We were able to tell his story only after he was moved to the Wisconsin Resource Center, where inmates are allowed to speak to the media. Our stories have impact, and sometimes it's huge. In 2013, we found Wisconsin was declining to take $14 million in federal funding to help people with disabilities get work. After our story ran, Governor Scott Walker reversed the policy, and a waiting list of 3,000 people with disabilities was erased. How else do we earn trust? One way is to reveal all of our funders, large and small. As you can see here, WCIJ has a wide base of support from many foundations. Last year, 500 donors supported our work. We also partner routinely with reputable media organizations to bring news you can count on. Our partners include NPR, Wisconsin Public Radio, ProPublica, Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting, The Guardian, and many others. In fact, in 2020, we will be partnering with Reveal, APM, and The Guardian to explore disinformation and voter suppression aimed at Wisconsin residents ahead of the presidential election and how secure our voter systems are from hacking. Wisconsin is expected to be ground zero for these efforts. The project Narrow Margin is being reported by 15 UW-Madison journalism students studying investigative reporting under me. We also plan to hire a full-time professional reporter and a public engagement professional to help with Narrow Margin. Watch for these stories later this year. Because of our commitment to transparency in 2018, we were invited to join the Trust Project, a global network of news organizations that pledged to help people assess the credibility of stories they read. Trust Project members commit to ethical practices, inclusive reporting, fact-checking, and correcting errors. We also explain how and why we do stories. For example, in September, I wrote a column explaining why we waited 18 months to tell the story of Roberto, an immigrant allegedly trafficked on a Wisconsin cabbage farm, and the steps we took to protect him from harm. Another way we gain trust is through rigorous fact-checking of our stories. We check each number, we check the spelling of each name, we verify a person's title and affiliations, we use transcripts of taped interviews to make sure quotes are accurate, word for word, and we make sure those quotes are used in the right context. A typical report takes 8 to 12 hours to fact-check. A story on sexual abuse in the Catholic Church in Wisconsin took more than 20 hours. Even veteran reporters like former Wisconsin Watch staff member Bill Leader, seen in the middle there with his dog Stella, go through fact-checking. Here he stands next to 4 years worth of fact-checking files. So how do you know whether the news you read, see, and hear is trustworthy? Here are some things to look for. Are the sources named? If not, why not? Are a range of viewpoints represented? Are key facts in the report confirmed by other news outlets, especially trusted ones? Does the news organization, if nonprofit, reveal how it gets its money so that you can assess whether its stories are truly independent of its funders? Does it promptly correct information that is wrong? Does it cover news from a nonpartisan viewpoint, or is it always from a conservative or liberal point of view? Some final thoughts on how to become a better news consumer. Refrain from spreading misinformation on social media. You know the posts and tweets I'm talking about. Yep, the ones from that relative. Avoid living in a news bubble. Read, listen to, and watch news from diverse sources. If in doubt, check Snopes, PolitiFact, factcheck.org, The Washington Post, or other fact-checking sites. And you can always Google it. Thanks for allowing me to tell our story and sharing how you can make democracy stronger by only reading and sharing real information from legitimate news organizations. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Dee.